Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. We have a little bit of a late start to our show, but this is the Synergy Connection Show, and today is Thursday, February the 21st. I have Trey Malicott back with me, and Trey does hold his master's degree in counseling psychology. He's been on the show with me a couple of times. He works today as a personal coach, writer, and speaker on multiple topics. But I believe that his true strength lies in his ability to give people the tools they need to step out of a destructive narrative that they've been living so that they can step into a life of joy. So today we're going to talk about what a narrative is and how someone trapped in one that is destructive can change their address, so to speak. Thanks for joining me again, Trey. First of all, tell everyone how they can get hold of you if they recognize themselves in what we're going to be talking about this morning.
Well, thank you, Lucy. It's really great being with you. I have one big website called upsizeyoursoul.com and have podcasts and videos and downloadable journaling guides, all sorts of things. And that'd probably be the very best way to connect with me. And, you know, today I'm really, really excited to talk about this thing called the narrative and how to really ultimately step into a place of unconditional love and how we create a life of joy, peace, and purpose. So thanks again for having me with you today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always enjoy having you here. So if we're going to spend this hour talking about kind of the meaning of life as it exists, you know, for most of us, and to learn this unconditional love that we have for ourselves and how to sort of embrace divinity, you often have said in workshops, you know, that you're going to dive in, that you're going to actually take somebody into understanding their life as it currently exists and maybe how to find a better place where they will have more joy and happiness and fulfillment. So let's kind of go there. And what do you mean by unconditional love?
Okay. Well, as I dive in, first of all, when you think about the concept of unconditional love, that's predicated on the idea that we understand love in the first place. Mm-hmm. We have to, in order to be unconditional, we have to have experienced unconditional love. And so as a concept, I think that, where you begin is you start with looking at what are all the rules you have about people, about life, about how the world is supposed to work. Let me lay a foundation for us. As children, we come into this world and we are beautifully, innocently, unconditionally loving. We're a divine expression. When we land on this planet, we have everything within us to be unconditionally loving, to be the divine essence that we truly are. But what happens is, as we are, as we're raised along the journey, as we have different experiences, as we learn from our parents or whomever has a major influence in our lives, what we learn are all sorts of rules about how the world is supposed to work. And if you look at love, for instance, in the context of relationships, most people believe that a relationship is nothing more than a set of rules and adhering to those rules. These are my rules of engagement. These are your rules. Let's see if we can make a process together. That's not unconditional love. Unconditional love is saying, I know that you're a divine expression. I hope and have expectation that you will show up as well as you possibly can and that you are capable of loving unconditionally. What gets in the way are all these rules about how the world is supposed to be, how other people are supposed to be. So I want to begin with that. First of all, if someone wants to really understand unconditional love in their lives, they have to look at the conditions and the judgments and the expectations that they've been indoctrinated with on the front end. All those rules. Let me give you an example, okay? As a child, I was raised to believe that people that were different than me were a threat, right?
How so?
If someone was a different color, a different race, a different way they spoke, a different academic level, if they just didn't fit the mold that meant safe in the minds of my mother and father, they were a threat.
Okay.
And so I developed a story of condition and judgment and expectation about other people. Mm-hmm. If I want to step into a place of unconditional love, those rules about what's acceptable, what's unacceptable, they don't work. Because they're based on someone else's perspective. They're based on my parents' perspective. So, stepping into unconditional love, step number one, know what your rules are.
But most people don't have a clue as to what
they... no clue.
Yeah. So how do they go about knowing what their rules are?
Okay. Well, without getting too far in the weeds, what I want you to think about is that as human beings... we actually are dynamically creating our reality every single day.
Mm-hmm.
We have the option to wake up every morning and say, today I'm going to create my existence exactly the way I choose to. How many people do you know do that?
None
for the most part. Maybe most two part. Of us. Maybe,
maybe
five
two
of
us, yeah, but there's not very many.
And we do that. We have that. We're unable to create like that because we live in what I call a fixed reality. The fixed reality says that this is how you're successful. This is what a relationship is. This is how you're supposed to look. This is how you're supposed to talk. This is where you're supposed to line up religiously, politically, socially, spiritually, intellectually. If you look at the average person, actually, if you look at anyone, there is a whole collection of the way life is supposed to be. Now, what that does, all those rules about how life is supposed to be, fix us in a set reality.
So if I was going to kind of interpret that for the average guy out there or gal out there that's listening.
Mm-hmm.
So you wake up, the alarm goes off,
mm-hmm.
and you throw your feet on the floor, and you stand up. At that moment, your reality is already fixed
mm-hmm.
as to how you expect you to behave in that day.
Right.
And so even if I wasn't going to work, let's say I'm going to go to Walmart and to Publix and run a bunch of errands.
Mm-hmm.
My eyes are looking out at the world from my mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I see somebody who is behaving differently than I would behave, I'm already interacting with that individual.
Right.
And making some judgments of, oh, you would not be a good friend for me to have.
Right. Okay. Or you're a threat, or you're scary,
yeah.
or you're this, or you're that. It's
right.
all sorts of analysis that we make at any
okay.
given time. So what I contend is that if you want to step into to a truly unconditional, joyful place, you have to first and foremost know all of your rules and know what purpose those rules serve. Let me give you an example, okay? With multiple clients that I work with, 99% of everyone, actually 100% of every client that I ever worked with has a wound. They have a story. They have a belief system. They have a narrative that drives the way life is supposed to look and feel. You know, markers for success, for instance, markers for a relationship, the way they're supposed to look, the way they're supposed to act. When you get right down to it, we've got a massive collection of expectations for ourselves.
You know, right. part of what I'm thinking, too, is remember the whole series of books, maybe they're still doing them, called What Color's Your Parachute?
Uh-huh.
And so there's so many business books, mm-hmm. models of dress for success.
Absolutely.
This is what you do in interactions if you want to succeed.
Uh-huh.
And so we've been indoctrinated from the get-go to kind of look at life as, if you follow these rules,
mm-hmm.
you will achieve your success or your goals.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. When I decided to really start to own my soul, I looked at all my rules I had about how I dressed, how I acted, who I interacted with, what love meant to me, what success was, performance, what all my stuff meant. And when I made a radical shift to move out of a life of materialistic egotistical indulgence. I deliberately moved out of that. I sold a very large house. I downsized my life from $13,000 expense per month to now I spend less than $2,000 a month. But here's the interesting piece of that. When I made that shift to step out of all those rules of performance and expectation and judgment and criticism and start to live my life as a creative observer, 95% of my friends thought I was sick, thought there was something wrong with me, thought that I had lost my mind, you know. And the reality is that we're indoctrinated to this idea of a fixed reality. For instance, many, many people think there is a right and precise way to do everything. Mm-hmm. There is not a right and precise way. Many, many people think there is a black and white approach to things. Mm-hmm. That is not, life is not black or white. It is a beautiful kaleidoscope of color.
Right.
Many people think that if they worry about things outside of them, they'll be able to control them. That's a myth. Many, many people have a story that says, I need someone else to complete me, to make me whole. That's a narrative that is oppressive. Many of us have an idea that to be worthwhile in the world, we have to be constantly achieving and doing something meaningful. But where I've landed is, what if all of that is wrong? What if we don't have to perform in any way? What if we don't have to act any certain way? What if we can create real time? What if we can liberate ourselves from all the stories of oppression and pain and sorrow? Going back to the clients that I have, do you know, almost exclusively, every one of them has a traumatizing experience. Mm. Think about the clients that you've worked with over the years. And people punctuate around that trauma.
So because this happened to me, I won't allow that to ever take place.
That's
again.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because this happened, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. This is who I am. And what I contend is this idea of a fixed reality is actually the biggest myth that we live with. Because we are constantly evolving every single day.
Right.
So there's no such thing as a fixed reality.
Right. I have often, I work symbolically so much in mm-hmm. my mind at least. And when I'm relaying stories to people, it's very symbolic. But I just think if we kind of understand that at birth, we're beginning our journey, however long that journey is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And at the end of our life, you know, we've concluded the physical journey, mm-hmm. maybe not the spiritual journey right. of our soul, but certainly the physicality of that journey.
Right.
So as we walk, and you know, you and I have talked about sometimes how people can get into ruts and they stay in that rut mm-hmm. for their entire lifetime almost. They don't see over the edges of the rut they've made. But the concept of a journey, that we are on the most amazing adventure of a journey mm-hmm. that started at birth and will take us until death.
Right.
And yet people don't see it as this amazing adventure.
No, because they're fixed in a reality. They're fixed in a reality. They mm-hmm. have a, basically, most people live within a safety plan about how life is supposed to be and how it's supposed to unfold.
Right.
And that's a spiritual issue because, in my opinion, we are dynamic, evolving, bold, beautiful creatures that fit within a conscious matrix of absolute brilliance. We're not separate. Do you know that humans are the only part of all of creation, the only species, if you will, that denies our own evolution? We question it, right?
That's true.
We evaluate ourselves based on our past. Why do we do that? There's not a tree in the world that's looking out saying, wow, I lost my leaves last year, now I'm feeling skinny. Or I put on a little extra water weight. No, that's not how nature works. We deny our evolution, and that is a spiritual issue. But we deny it because we have all these rules about how life is supposed to be, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to act. And those rules prevent us from growing and being the artist of our own lives.
Well, if you're the artist of your own life, then you have to take responsibility, right?
Bingo, sister. That's a big one.
Right. And so, again, I think it's so much easier for people to look backwards and say, well, I wouldn't be where I am today if it hadn't been for my mom, my dad, mm-hmm. my brother, my sister, you know, somebody that we're going to blame mm-hmm. for not accepting responsibility.
That's right. You know, the most powerful question I'll often ask my clients is, I'll say, who are you?
And
that's
the
big one. That's the big one.
And then
the
answer is like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've been around the block for a load of years as well. Our natural inclination. So you meet someone at a cocktail party. Who are you? Or what do you do for a living? We ask questions that are past oriented. You know, I'm a healthcare executive. I hold a master's degree. I do this. I do that. I have a family of seven. I make money. I drive a Mercedes. Who the heck cares? Right?
Right.
When you get right down to that powerful question, who are you?
Right.
I know who I am. I am not my past.
Right. In fact, we have a mutual friend who spends most of his time in either Spain or France.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that in Europe, nobody asks that question. It's like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And what do you do means now.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I love to read.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I love to paint. Or I love to take photographs.
Right.
But, I mean, it's in the moment. It's not who you're defined by. And so I think the Europeans probably have a one-up on us in terms of appreciating people for who they are right at the moment.
That's exactly right. Well, let me drill that back to going back to this idea of unconditional love and all these rules that we hold. If a person looks at all the experiences in their past, the experiences that are most painful caused us suffering, and as a result, we create a rule that says, I don't want to suffer anymore. For instance, in a relationship, if somebody breaks your heart, you develop a rule and you say, oh, I'll never ever be with somebody like that person again. Or if they demonstrate a distrusting behavior, or if they're dishonest, or whatever it might be, we set up a rule.
Mm-hmm.
And that little rule boxes us into a fixed reality of our past.
Right.
So most people spend the preponderance of time in who they were. What did they do? How's the world supposed to be? How do they mark and measure their success? How do they look? And we also compare and despair with other people. We look at where we've been and where we are right now. And instead of saying, right now I'm in a beautiful, perfect place to create something brilliant, we say, look at where I have been and look at how miserable I am now, or how much of a challenge this is, or how evolved. You know, we're in this constant comparison to our past. And I believe our past is actually nothing more than a record of our evolution.
So if people would begin to see that record as simply an educational opportunity, maybe, you know, so it doesn't define me as a success or failure. It simply is an evolution of where I'm going.
Right. That's all it was.
Right. But I think the majority of people, it's kind of like they have a starting point, almost like a race.
Mm-hmm.
And so the gates opened up and I'm in first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm in middle school and now I'm in high school. And where am I graduating within my class?
Right.
And where am I going to go to school? And what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And now everybody's getting married and I'm not married. And what does that say about
me? Compare and despair.
Right. So, I mean, they do. They look at every little part of their life by comparison to maybe whatever the model of success is.
Uh-huh.
And then judge themselves based upon that.
Well, let me drill that model of success thing down. Here's the thing that Americans, actually it's a worldwide problem, but Americans don't get one big thing. We do not think for ourselves. We are spoon-fed information every single day through the various media outlets, social media, and here's the key. The advertising industry is designed to do one thing, sell us a product. Do you know how you sell a product? By making a person think they need that product.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're indoctrinated right out of the gate that we are imperfect. We smell. We're not going to have sex when we want to. We need to do something with our hair. We need to make sure our body looks a certain way. We need to have a certain kind of job, a certain kind of car. And if we do all of that good stuff, then we'll be acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And the media and the advertising industry has stripped away our divinity by making us feel small. So that's the first thing that a person needs to understand.
Mm-hmm.
We are being indoctrinated every day to feel small. The second piece of that is when you look at the influence of traditional religions, What they have done is separated us from the divine essence that exists within us. They say, you must have a priest or a pastor to know God. You must follow this right and precise path in order to see the divine. And I contend that the meaning and the purpose of life is twofold: to discover the divinity that already resides within you, and to step fully into a place of connected, unconditional love toward yourself and toward others. But herein lies the problem. You can't do that if you have a rule and a standard about how you're supposed to be, and if you have systems in life that beat the divinity out of you.
Very, very true.
Right?
Yeah.
So, going back to this idea, and this is the content of the most recent book I'm working on right now called The Mindful Moment. How would your life be different if your past had no value whatsoever? You literally said, that's a former version of me. Mm-hmm. And today, I have the ability to create something dynamic and beautiful. Apart from who I have been. One day, I was sitting on my front porch. That's a little side note. But I was sitting in my office on the front porch. And I had this moment of crisis because I had to write a bio about who I am now. And what I wanted to write was, I am a man who is on a journey of constant and profound evolution. That's it, right? But the people that were asking for the bio wanted all the credentialing.
Yes, they did.
And so I had to say, well, I hold this master's degree. I've written these books. I ran this type of healthcare company. And it struck me that all of that is good. That's who I have been. But that's not who I am at all today.
Right, right.
At all.
Right. You know, people that maybe have a car accident, or maybe they have a stroke or something, and they have amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, they have the best opportunity.
Yeah, because they don't know.
They don't know who they were. Uh-huh. And so they can create, wherever they are at the moment, who do I want to be?
That's exactly right.
And that's what all of us can do. But most people are afraid to do that because, number one, it goes back to taking responsibility mm-hmm. to make the changes, and then taking action.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you freeze when it's like, okay, what's my first step? And we were talking the other day about, you know, the concept of somebody who says, I don't have a recipe for that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what ingredients do I need?
Right.
You know, because we want to make the perfect cake or the perfect casserole or whatever it might be.
Right.
So you walk into that kitchen
mm-hmm.
and you don't know what measuring cups or spoons or bowls or anything you need
right.
to create this perfect life.
Right. And the very act of measurement is a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So the amnesia person gets to go in and say, I don't know, I feel like I'd like to make a souffle today.
Yeah, and I'm just going to create it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So people spend a preponderance of time in their past, or they spend a bulk of their time creating the illusion of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is where I'm going to be. This is what I'm working toward. This is how I'm going to arrive. But that's foolhardy, because our future does not exist. Right? Now get your noggin around that. It's an illusion.
Right.
It's just sitting there. We might have it another day tomorrow. We might not.
We might not.
So going back to this responsibility thing, here's the power question. If you knew that you were going to drop dead in precisely 7 hours from now,
mm-hmm.
how would you live? I bet you wouldn't be worrying about how you're going to get the next car you want to drive, or, I mean, you'd savor the moments of life.
Right. And that is a very difficult task for the majority of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you have to actually work at.
Absolutely.
To walk along and pay attention to where you're walking, not because you're going to fall down,
mm-hmm.
but because there's so much beauty around you. And if you just walk, you don't see it.
That's exactly right. And to add insult to injury now, you know, when you think about the way we're being indoctrinated to unworthiness,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you look at all of the distractions now. People are screaming through Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or whatever the novel thing of the day is. People are so distracted that they're not seeing the people in front of them. They're not seeing the beauty around them. So if you want to step into the mindful moment, if you want to step into unconditional love, you have to separate from those things that are making you feel insignificant. Mm-hmm. The second phase of that is you have to, I believe, at least I've had to, get to a point where I say to myself, my past is completely meaningless. It's just a record. Mm-hmm. Just and here's the beauty. You know this as a therapist as I do. The memory that we have from our past changes. Mm-hmm. Yet we think it's fixed, you know, mm-hmm. fixed in our lineage, fixed in our geography, fixed in our academic credentials, fixed in our performance, fixed in a sorrow or difficulty of our relationships. Yet memory changes over time.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So it's about how you interpret. And then here's the major piece. If you want to really create a life of unconditional love and joy and peace and purpose, you have to plant yourself so firmly in the mindful moment that you're not attached to anything. Not attached to an outcome, not attached to a person, not attached to how it's supposed to look and feel. You live in a place where you say, it is all beautifully unfolding, and I'm leaning into that. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds wooey-gooey and airy-fairy or whatever you want to say. Yeah. But what strikes me is that people are more and more distracted now than they've ever been. They, you know, the three most treated issues in the United States are anxiety, depression, and substance abuse. Mm-hmm. They all go hand in hand.
They do.
We're seeing an uptick now in people saying, I'm living with such trauma. Well, guess what? Everybody has trauma in their lives. It's about how much does that trauma punctuate your life? Mm-hmm. Do you need to see yourself as a victim? Do you need to blame others?
You know, one of the things that I've become maybe increasingly aware of mm-hmm. is because of social media, whether it's on our phones or on the internet or even on television mm-hmm. and the radio, because they're all clamoring for the best ratings, mm-hmm. they come up with the worst case scenario stories mm-hmm. and trying to claim the bigger audience, if you will. And so if we're not sure of who we are mm-hmm. and we have maybe some anxiety about life, our life and the world around us, we have depression, maybe for mm-hmm. those same reasons, and we're relying on whether it's opiates at the worst case scenario, or prescription medication, mm-hmm. or alcohol, or marijuana, you know, to kind of cope.
Right.
But it's so sad because you can't get out of that loop unless you turn everything off. You literally have to turn off your devices, uh-huh. whatever that device is, in order to be in the moment mm-hmm. because they want to take you to the worst case scenario moment.
Yep.
And so maybe, you know, the old fashioned way of reading poetry mm-hmm. or learning to meditate or taking walks in nature
right.
or just doing something that isn't related to where we currently live mm-hmm. is
absolutely
part of the way.
You look at Facebook, for instance. Facebook is going to drag you into the past. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's politics or religion or government or what somebody ate 15 minutes earlier, it's all a past orientation.
Right.
I don't care what you ate. Right?
Showing your plate before you
yeah,
consumed it.
Absolutely. And you think that's going to excite me, right? And then Facebook drags us into the future. Which vacation can you do? What class can you take? How can you improve yourself? Mm-hmm. Right? We are being thrown past to future. There is nothing mindful in the moment about social media.
Right.
Nothing that says, stop right now, breathe, go within, find your peace, disconnect from the expectations. You are beautiful, you are divine, you are perfect. Yet we scour thousands of kitty posts, not kitty as in child,
yeah, right.
Kitty as in little kitty cat.
Kitty cats.
We start looking for joy through the kitty cat posts. Mm-hmm. That joy resides within. So going back to this idea of unconditional love, if somebody wants to stop suffering, first and foremost, think about what your orientation is. Are you living in the past, or are you living in the future, or do you live firmly planted in the mindful moment where you create real time?
one of the things that you and I talked about a little bit yesterday is this device I had you try. And for those listening, you can find it at Heart Math, M-A-T-H, Institute. But it's called Inner Balance. And it's like a little biofeedback.
Mm-hmm.
But for an awful lot of people that think they know how to meditate or to go within, it's a device that actually gives you real time as to whether you're doing it or not, so that you can learn what that feels like. And then when you are in a stressful situation or you're trying to be in the moment now, that it helps you know what that now feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And you had fun with it.
I did have fun with it. In fact, you know, I don't really have a problem getting into a clear space in my mind. But what I do know is, in order for me to get to that clear space in my mind, it requires a breathing process. I have to disconnect. I have to step completely out of my past. I cannot think about what's unfolding tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel it in my brain,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of stepping out of suffering, maybe you need a device like that to help you understand how you're your body, you know, our bodies and minds are directly and dynamically connected.
Well, one of the things that this device teaches you is what's called heart coherence.
Uh-huh.
And our heart, which most people don't have a clue about, and including my physician, I was explaining this to her the other day, and she's ordering one for herself and for her daughter. But heart coherence is where your heart is signaling your brain versus the other way around. Most of us think that our brain controls everything. And we actually have more messages that are sent by our heart from the moment that we're conceived,
mm-hmm.
that goes from the heart to the brain, not the other way around. And so heart coherence helps you heal your body, which is very, very interesting.
Absolutely.
And so when you get into the breathing framework,
mm-hmm.
that your heart is in control, not your brain, because the minute you let your brain go someplace, this little device turns red.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, ding, nope, you're in the wrong place. And each of the dings has a different tone, so you know when you're in green, which is heart coherence. Also, anybody who maybe is interested in this device, they can get it on the Boomers Forever Young website, which is under services on synergyconnectionradio.com. So there's two places you can go for it, either the Heart Math Institute or Boomers Forever Young. Mm-hmm. So I think that that is so interesting as to how we can choose to be in the moment and recognize mm-hmm. that we're in the moment.
That's right. Well, you know, let me go out on a little rant for a second. When you look at the world of psychology, self-help literature, all the classes that we take, you know, that are available prolifically everywhere we look, most of the things that we read in that space are predicated on the idea that we should set another rule. You know, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Think about in the world of relationships. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That is one human's perspective, which right. I respect that human, but mm-hmm. that's one person's perspective on people interacting.
Right. And using that, we've been doing that since way before the Bible, but the Bible is just that.
Right.
It's all the different disciples that followed Christ in the New Testament,
mm-hmm.
but it was their interpretation of who he was
exactly.
and what happened. And so the Bible's interpretation, I don't want to say it's up for grabs because it's not, but it's literature.
Mm-hmm.
It is not necessarily the absolute gospel, so to speak.
That's right.
It's just an interpretation from a man who lived long ago who thought he was saying everything that was his perception
right.
of who Christ was, therefore God was.
That's right. And that's all self-help is. So going back mm-hmm. to that book, I had a client the other day that said, oh, this has been the most influential book in my life. And I said, well, that's interesting. How do you operate? Well, you know, what that book has done for her was showed her how it gave her a framework for judging.
Sure.
And I looked at her and I said, what if men are not from Mars and women are not from Venus? And what if we both share masculine and feminine energy?
Right.
And part of living in the moment is learning how to embrace both your feminine and your masculine side energetically.
Right.
Wow, that's controversial, you know? The thing is, and this is the point, everybody is looking for somebody to tell them how to do it.
The recipe.
Right. So let me throw down a recipe for how to live in the mindful moment, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's not a recipe. It really is. Number one, know what your rules are.
Again, they have to dig a little bit.
You gotta mine that past.
Yeah, right. They have to figure out, how did I get that understanding? And so maybe they sit down with a journal for a little bit and mm-hmm. say, what are my values?
Absolutely. Do you know, on the website, there are 6 journaling guides, and if someone wanted to download just one of those, or mm-hmm. all 6 of mm-hmm. them, they'd have enough information to really figure out what their core stories are.
And remind them what the website
is. UpsizeYourSoul.com. Okay. So that's the first thing. Know your stories. Number two, stay out of your past because it's gone. I was joking last night, but you know, us looking at our past through an evaluative lens is like an iPhone 8 looking at an iPhone 2 and being critical of it.
Right.
Right? That's stupid. It's illogical. Right. It's irrational.
Right.
So think about all that. Number three, evaluate every single condition, judgment, or expectation you have for other people because they're a direct reflection of your own self-imposed conditions.
Right.
Judgments, expectations. Number four, learn to disconnect and breathe right here, right now, right? And then the last piece is, in the recipe, step into a profound sense of faith that, number one, you're not a mistake, that your journey has not been deliberately hard, that you have the ability and the strength and everything within you right now to solve every problem facing you. Mm-hmm. And lastly, if you want to live fully and boldly in unconditional love, it takes total and profound responsibility for every decision, every interpretation, every conversation, every idea you have about the world. Here's the thing. Most people are scared to death of taking full responsibility for their lives. Think of that lovely quote that Marianne Williamson says, that we're not afraid of the power quote. Mm-hmm. Our greatest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure.
Beyond measure. Because it's so much easier to stop before you get there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's way easier to play real small.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, and I'm going to go back in time a little bit with us,
mm-hmm.
is we did a retreat coming up on a year.
Almost a year ago.
But it was the second retreat I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that was there had to sort of stop and think, what am I willing to give up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's keeping me from moving forward?
Right.
And what am I willing to give up? So everybody took, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes mm-hmm. to kind of think about that. And then they brought everything out to us. Mm-hmm. You and I were outside. But they brought everything out to us and we burned them. And in respect to what we're talking about right now, it was a group activity.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone could look around and see that everyone else had things that they had to give up.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a support.
Right.
And so many times when we're asking somebody to make a change, to step into the moment, mm-hmm. to leave the past behind, to give up whatever it is that is holding them back,
mm-hmm.
they're doing it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that exercise was so amazing because there wasn't a dry eye out there.
No.
But everyone knew that everyone else was walking alongside of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I might be... I'm going to own this. If we're going to change the way, the course, the trajectory of life as we know it,
mm-hmm.
both socially and individually, we have got to embrace one powerful concept, that we are not separate.
Mm-hmm.
we are not separate from our divinity, that God is not sitting up in the cosmos looking down on us, that we are an infinite expression of the divine. Mm-hmm. And the divine that lives within me lives within you.
Right.
That word namaste.
Right. I see.
I see the divine in you. And when you live in that way, you start living more lightly. You start appreciating things differently. And I think that ritual that you're talking about was an opportunity for people to see that we're all going at it. We're all fighting. We all have the shackles of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And it's not just them in their life.
Absolutely.
Dealing with this. And you don't have to do it alone.
No.
So many people, you know, believe that the only way through their life is by themselves. And granted, you come into the world alone, mm-hmm. and you go out alone.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're here, you can be together.
Absolutely.
Together with nature. I mean, I have people hugging trees.
Uh-huh.
And they get the energy from the tree. It's also a grounding exercise. But energetically, vibrationally, everything. The chair you're sitting on, mm-hmm. the table that's in front of you, everything has a vibrational frequency.
That's right.
And so when we begin to recognize that we're not in the world alone,
mm-mm.
you know, the animals that are out there, whether they're wild or tame,
right,
and everything that is living mm-hmm. around us is part of us.
That's exactly right. And, you know, to step into this place of unconditional love, first of all, we need to stop looking at each other and circumstances and even at ourselves with disdain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't be critical. I cannot be critical of someone else's perspective because that's not kind. That's not divine. That's not honoring the uniqueness and brilliance of other people.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And the fact that, yes, we are going at this journey alone, but I think it's our imperative to hold space for each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the five most powerful words in the entire language are, I want to know more. I want to know more. I want to hear your whole story. Because it's in the hearing of the story that we begin to see the divine unfolding of life that's beautiful.
Right.
Right? Or we see the tragedy of people's lives. You know, I have a woman that I'm onboarding right now, and she is clinging desperately to her trauma story.
Because that's all she knows.
It's all she knows.
Mm-hmm.
And she was sitting with me the other night, and she said, I've never met anyone like you. How can you have come through such pain? And you know what? Here's the thing. I have had a truckload of pain and sorrow and tragedy and trauma in my life. If I wanted to live my life through that lens, then I could be beautifully miserable. Delightfully depressed.
Sitting right? on a beach crying into your margarita.
Every day, right? But along the way, I said, just because bad stuff happens to good people, that doesn't mean that I am the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
People in relationships say, I suck at relationships because I had a struggle with one. What makes you think that? Maybe the struggle was to teach you how to be better at it. I had a failed challenge at work, and so I'm no good at this. No, maybe you had a challenge that taught you how to be better and more brilliant.
Right.
I love it when people say, I'm not an artist at all. I'm not creative. Oh, you're not, huh? That's insane. We are a creative expression.
Mm-hmm.
We can create with our clothes, with our food, with our conversations, with our journaling, with the way we walk through nature. We can create real time all the time. But that all requires responsibility. And most people would be much happier, or think they're much happier, mucking around in the pit of sorrow than they are saying, today I'm going to create the reality that I choose.
You've played with a kaleidoscope before.
Yeah.
Okay, so I love metaphors and symbolism. And the way I kind of help people look at their life is if they are seeing only the same thing over and over and over, it's because they've not turned the kaleidoscope.
Mm-hmm.
All of the beautiful pieces are in there.
Right.
All you'd have to do is shift just a tiny bit, and they'll all fall into a different picture.
Shake it up.
Shake it up.
Yeah. You know, Lucy, one of the most profound years of my entire life, I sat in this process, and you know, coming to a point where you live in the mindful moment, which I can say that I'm fairly good at it, but it is a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken about 13, 14 years to get to the point where I can do that.
Right.
You know?
And you're continuing to practice as I am.
Every day. I use chanting music. I use essential oils. I ground myself. All sorts of things. But anyway, in the early stages of the journey, what I did was just started asking myself questions. Why do I believe that? Why do I have that judgment? Why do I think that way? Where did that story come from? And over a one-year period, I decided to go headfirst into any fear about other types of people that I had. So I knew that people of certain political perspectives were a threat to me.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people have religious, you know, I just had a whole list of people that scared me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spent that year putting myself in a situation where I would hold space for myself with them and real time analyzing my fears. Why do I have this judgment? Why do I hold this fear? What is it about them that makes me feel insecure? And coming to a point of ownership of the fact that I create it.
Mm-hmm.
I perceive you a certain way, and that's my, I'm creating that. I perceive the world as safe or unsafe. I'm creating that. Right now, what we look in, at least, for instance, with the political arena, we're watching fear being created every single day.
Every single second.
Every second. And people are polarizing. They're
right.
Running to their fear.
Right.
You cannot run to fear and live in the mindful moment.
No, absolutely you
cannot.
It's impossible. Because you're running to the future,
that's
which doesn't
right.
exist.
That's right.
You and I have talked about Thich Nhat Hanh and
uh-huh.
the fact that he has won so many like Nobel Peace Awards, and he's written so many different books on mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've mentioned on previous shows is his whole concept of being in the moment requires that you see that person, you know, that you actually see their pain, or you see, you know, like if you were
mm-hmm.
with people that you thought brought fear into
right.
your life in some way because they were politically or academically or something different than you.
Right.
And so what Thich Nhat Hanh will do is he will sit with them, and you have to actually engage the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So cell phones down, television off, you know, looking
right.
at that other person, but then being able to recognize that you see them, you hear them, you understand maybe the pain they're coming from,
mm-hmm.
and then asking for them to help you understand.
That's right.
And, you know, that's the only way we can begin to gain perspective. So as we look at the political climate, or
mm-hmm.
we look at religious wars that have been fought forever
mm-hmm.
in the Middle East, or understanding anything that's going on right now in the moment,
mm-hmm.
it's going to require that. It's going to mean that people actually stop, clear their minds,
mm-hmm.
look at the other person, and ask, please help me
mm-hmm.
understand. And I wonder how many people are going to be willing to do that, or how many just need to have that armor up.
I think we're going to see, and this is somewhat speculative, but I think we're going to see a greater polarity. People are going to either cling to their fear, or they're going to say, I must seek to understand.
Right. I'm
yeah.
hoping that's where
I
we
am
go.
Too.
Because understanding, and whether it's about nutrition,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many people are like, oh yeah, well, give me another Big Mac.
Right.
Or whether it's about, you know, the understanding their emotions, or understanding
mm-hmm.
their spiritual life. But it does require getting quiet and asking
mm-hmm.
to understand.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's the encouragement. We're afraid of ourselves because we've been taught that we are broken.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid of ourselves because we've been taught to compare and despair. What if you stepped back and you said to yourself, I am a beautiful, brilliant, dynamic, ever-changing expression of something that is so much greater and bigger than me?
But in order to be able to make that statement, people are initially going to go, oh, that doesn't feel right. Because
that's
not who I think I am.
That's right.
So it's repetition.
Absolutely.
You know, I play golf. You've played golf.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, the first time you hold a golf club and you hit a ball, it's not a pretty sight.
Mm-mm.
You might miss it altogether.
We call that a mulligan.
Right. And if you do hit it, Lord knows where it's going to go, because mm-hmm. I used to play competitive golf, and I would laugh because somebody would go, oh no, it's going to be one of those days.
Uh-huh.
And I would think, yes, your day is going to be one of those days. Uh-huh. You'll be in every trap or bunker or miss the green all day long.
That's right.
But when you practice anything, and so this kind of belief system that says, I am beautiful,
mm-hmm.
I am competent, it's a little bit like the book, The Help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little girl in it that uh-huh. that basically was being told that over and over again,
right.
that, and she would repeat it and uh-huh. say, I am beautiful, you know, right. And she didn't say competent, but, you know, I'm those words that
right.
she used. And so to learn to do that over and over and over again so that you begin to believe it, because
mm-hmm.
it cannot be a one time only,
right.
because your mind is going to say, yeah, I think you got the wrong person here.
Right. You know what I did one year? I was walking through the airport in Denver after coming off a long week of training, and I decided to look at people through a lens of appreciation rather than a lens of criticism.
Mm, that must have been interesting.
It was powerful, because when we start to observe others through a lens of appreciation, we then can open the door for us to appreciate ourselves.
Right.
And this idea that you fake it until you make it,
mm-hmm.
I think there's validity to the idea that you have to practice those belief systems. But really, when it comes right down to it, if you want to see your brilliance and see your beauty, then get into nature and look
mm-hmm.
at how we are. You know, our lungs, for instance, are almost an exact blueprint of the structure of a tree.
Of a tree. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The way our brains operate mimic the way that energy flows
mm-hmm.
cosmically.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
The symbiotic relationship. Anyway, I could go on and on and on.
Right. All we have to do is look at nature and we can see ourselves.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I think that's been the most grounding thing for me
mm-hmm.
to get to the sea or get to the mountains and to simply sit and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Release the stories of limitation from the past. Release the expectations from the future. And honor the moment, the only moment that we have, which is right here,
right now.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Right?
Right?
Now, you know, I would be the first one to say that if you have a J-O-B,
mm-hmm.
You can carry that concept with you,
mm-hmm.
but the reality also is that you need to be there at a certain time.
That's right.
You will work so many hours and you will leave at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
You may have responsibilities, you know, at home
mm-hmm.
with children or a spouse. You may have aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
You have drive time on Highway 19 or 75 or wherever
mm-hmm.
you happen to be commuting. And so that practicality of living in the moment has to be exercised.
Absolutely.
On a regular basis. And we cannot do it every second because we have doctor's appointments. We
mm-hmm.
have to go to the grocery store. You know, we have to run kids to band practice or soccer practice or football practice. And so our lives do have constraints on them.
Sure.
That keep us into the future because
uh-huh.
it's on the calendar.
Right.
And we don't have to live in the past.
Right.
But you know, we do, unfortunately, unless you're retired and have nobody that you're accountable to,
mm-hmm.
You do have things that creep up into your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that there are a lot of people that go, well, that works for that person,
right.
but it doesn't work for me. And what I kind of tell them, and I'm sure you do too, is that it's not a matter of having it work every second of every day. It's recognizing that you can have it whenever you want it.
Yeah, it's practice.
It's practicing it. And when you are with people like you and I are together,
mm-hmm.
we can be in the moment.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're in the moment right this second.
Yeah.
But we can be in the moment. But then eventually, you'll go your way, I'll go my way,
mm-hmm.
and we won't be in that moment anymore.
Right.
We'll have to choose a different moment to be in.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Lucy, I'm really grateful for the opportunity to spend some time with you. So thank you for letting me rant on about some of these things. Like I mentioned, I have the book called It's called The Mindful Moment, and it will be coming out probably within the next 2 to 4 months. And, you know, I'm just grateful for the partnership and the work that you do and how we can help people journey to a place of joy, peace, and purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you excited about going off to New York for 6 months?
I am thrilled. I will spend 6 beautiful months in Rhinebeck, New York at the Omega Institute, and my goal is to finish the ancillary workbook to the book, mm-hmm. and then I intend to launch a series of retreats right after the first of the year. So, yeah, I'm thrilled about that.
I think it's an exciting new chapter for you.
It's a daily practice, right?
Right, and see what's unfolding.
Oh, golly, it's all unfolding beautifully and perfectly. I know that. You know, I want to give you one encouragement, too, and that is that it's not for you. It's for the people that are listening to your show. Despite the fact that life feels challenging and difficult and you have struggles and problems and all of that, you know, in spite of all of that, how would your life look and feel if you actually thought of all of that as part of your perfecting journey? Mm-hmm. You're getting better and better every day in every way.
Right. I mean, the child that gets on the bicycle, you know, that's a tricycle, mm-hmm. and moves up to the bike that has training wheels and then eventually, you know, is able to ride just on 2 wheels with balancing.
Yeah.
I kind of look at that as our life, that, that we are constantly evolving and changing and growing, and it's all good.
Uh-huh.
It's all good.
Yeah. And there's not a single thing from our past that we should be ashamed of.
None.
Nothing to regret.
No.
No decision that wasn't right at the right time.
Right. And all you can do is what you can do.
Exactly, right.
At any given moment, the best is the best you have to give at that particular moment.
Yeah.
Well, Trey, I really want to thank you for visiting again, and I know we're going to even have you when you're in New York.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
We'll plug back in again on some of those future visits. Again, for people that are listening now that feel that this is a show that has benefits maybe for a loved one or a relative, a friend, somebody that you feel should listen to it, it will be up later this afternoon on SynergyConnectionRadio.com, and it is a very interactive website, so you can go to services and check out the people that are on the service tab. You can go to health blogs and understand why we use different products to maintain our health. The show notes also help people understand a synopsis of what the show was, and maybe they'll choose to listen to the hour-long program after reading the synopsis. So have a beautiful day, and make it your best. Thanks again for listening to the Synergy Connection Show.